Hello, everybody. Welcome back into Locked On Colts, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter. I'm joined by our usual Monday episode guest. Today's a Tuesday, though, because I was gone yesterday for obvious reasons. I'll let you guys know I was in L.A. for the Colts game. That was a really fun one, by the way. 30-24, the Colts fell in overtime, but that was a valiant effort in the second half by the Colts to come back down 14 points or more to really make this a game, and a really fun one at that, Zach. How's your day going, first off, and what do you think about the game on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, my day's going pretty good. I mean, I obviously wish the Colts would have won the game there on Sunday, but I think it was a really good showing for a team that's under kind of new leadership with Jacoby Brissett under center, and also a very young team. You know, we always forget this is a very young team. But for a team that's very young, that's kind of trying some new things on defense, has an offensive line group going through a couple changes, has a new quarterback under center, and it has a couple guys come back from injury from last year. I think that it was a really good showing. You know, they put together a pretty good fight against one of the better teams in the league. So, obviously, you wish you would have got the win, but I think it was a good game for them.
Yeah, if you look at the stats here, just it looks like a totally different story in the first half compared to the second half. Their Chargers were really kind of dominating there. Obviously, Vinatieri didn't help out a little bit with his missed kicks. But what was your big takeaways from the first half of that game? Because it seems like them falling behind there, and really that effort in the second half was just a complete flipping of the script there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first half, the Vinatieri kicks, they definitely reared its ugly head. I mean, I think that was one of the biggest takeaways from the whole game was just Vinatieri's struggles, because you don't really expect that out of a guy who is, you know, arguably the greatest of all time at his position. So that definitely sucked to see, and it kind of killed some momentum on offense. And even so on defense, I mean, the defense, if you see that your offense is putting together a drive of not getting any points and not making up any ground, then it definitely kills some momentum that way too. But the defense definitely struggled in the first half. I haven't rewatched the game yet on coach's film, but they definitely were getting picked apart by Phillip Rivers in the first half. There's a couple plays where it could have gone either way. You know, there was a couple times where they almost had Phillip Rivers and he got the ball out. And then there was that touchdown to Keenan Allen down the sideline where Rockison was all over him, just couldn't make a play on the ball. So I think there was a couple plays here and there that they definitely could have got better on, but the defense kind of got picked apart a little bit. The offense looked okay in the first half. They didn't really move it as well as you'd like, but they weren't making any big turnovers. But obviously they blew up in the second half. But the first half was a little rough to watch, and the Chargers kind of took over.
What's your thoughts on this, Zach? This has been kind of a hot topic over the last 48 hours or so. Just were you surprised by the lack of creativity by the defense? But I know Maddie was probably going to mix up a lot more as the season progressed. It's just week one, of course, but we heard a lot of talk about exotic defenses, a lot more different looks than we saw last year. We saw a little bit more man coverage on Sunday, but it seems like the middle of the zones there, this elite quarterback saw in the playoffs, Patrick Mahomes. We saw it again on week one, Phillip Rivers there. Just these elite quarterbacks take advantage of those holes in the zone there. Do you think that's sustainable against these quarterbacks? That's only the first like six or seven guys are going to have to go against this year, a top 10 in the league.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough situation because obviously you don't want to give those elite quarterbacks zones to throw the ball, but you have to kind of mix it up as a defense. You know, if you run man every single time, you're not really doing anything exotic. You're not really tricking up the quarterback. You're not really getting him to read things that aren't there. And that's a big part of playing defense is getting them to see something that's actually not happening so they make a mistake and you can take advantage of it. So you can't just run man all day, and obviously you can't run zone all day because they'll catch that. I think Eberflus did a decent job all game. I don't think it was one of his best showings for sure, but I do like that he was bringing some pressure. I think that he was pretty committed to getting some pressure on Rivers. The ball was just getting out quick, and other times the pressure just wasn't getting there. I think the young secondary guys played well, but I don't think it was good enough, and I think that's definitely going to be a point of emphasis going forward. I think if the secondary guys play a little bit better and the rushers and the blitzers, you know, can actually get home, I think we're talking about a completely different game. So I don't think Eberflus did a horrible job. I think the players just didn't have their best game out there, and it was against one of the better offenses in the league. You know, has really good back in Austin Eckler, who's one of the most elusive backs in the league. Keenan Allen, Michael Williams, Phillip Rivers, Hunter Henry. I mean, that's a really good offense. So it doesn't shock me that they struggled against them, especially in the first game. But you definitely would like to see the standard risen for the next game.
Let's talk about a few defensive players. So we're going to bounce around a little bit throughout this show. Let's talk about our takeaways and some players especially. But one of the guys who stood out through our preseason and really did so again, if we're not kind to Justin Houston offsides, he had two strip fumbles. Kamoko Touré, the second-year pro from Rutgers, seemed like he's really finding his groove right now. And that offseason period with Robert Mathis seems to be paying off. Just what stood out not only from week one with Ture, but also throughout the preseason there, because it seemed like he's really finding his footing there. His PFF career is 95.6, the best in the NFL for all edge rushers this week. It seems like he's just really hitting a groove at the right time for this team.
Yeah, and I really like what they're using him, like how they're using him. They're using him as that kind of designated pass rusher. They're not kind of making him do things that he's uncomfortable with, which is kind of, you know, setting a hard edge and being a run defender. It's just kind of letting him go out there on obvious pass plays or kind of mixing in there and just kind of unleashing him on the quarterback, which I really like. I think that's the best role you can use him in. And he looks to be a lot better in his hand usage. He looks to be a little bit stronger this year. He's cornering a little bit better even from last year. And, you know, you're kind of seeing that quickness, that speed, that strength on the edge. He's so hard to block one-on-one with all that. So, yeah, the sky's the limit with him as a pass rusher. I think he can be one of the better pass rushers in this league. I said it last year, only five games into last year. I wrote an article about him, and I said that last year that he could be one of the better pass rushers in this league. And I still believe that. I think he has all the upside and all the ability in the world. And I think we're just seeing the beginning of it right now. So hopefully he continues this good stretch and he can put it together against even better left tackles than the guy that they faced on Sunday.
Eventually, you'd hope in the next year or two he's able to play on rundowns, but do you expect just this season with the depth they have, and assuming Jabal Sheard's back here soon because they didn't put him on designated return IR, so he should be back in the first 8 weeks of the season, do you think that he's going to be just a primary guy you put down there, like second and long and third down, so to say?
You know, it doesn't really matter, I guess, is one way to say it, whereas – you know, if he becomes a good run defender, fine. If he never develops into one, you know, I don't really have an issue with that because today's NFL has so much subbing, so much different looks up front, so many just so many things you can do with the defense. You know, he doesn't need to be a starter. He doesn't need to be a guy who plays every snap of a game. If he plays 50% of the snaps and he's pass rushing on almost all the snaps he's playing, I think that's a very good role for him. So, you know, even if he never becomes a starter in this league per se, it's not really like he's a bust or a bad player. He could still get, you know, close to 10 sacks a season and never being a starter and being kind of a pass rush specialist. So, you know, I wouldn't say that I need him to develop this run defense. You would obviously like it, but right now he's just doing really well in that pass rush specialist role, and I wouldn't move him out of that spot at all.
If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if it weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you can also bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always take the other side and make your money back. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON. LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code locked on and visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and let's move over to a different second year pro on the defensive line here, Zach, and that's Tyquan Lewis, who was a curious DNP for the Colts on Sunday. Did that surprise you? I mean, it really surprised me because Jihad Ward was above him. I know Jihad Ward maybe had more flashes last year as a pass rusher, but Matt Eberflus said today at his press conference that he just referred to Frank Reich as far as the question goes, why was he inactive? So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on Tyquan Lewis and what do you think that means for him moving forward?
Yeah, so I like Lewis, and I probably like him more than some other people, but I like him more as a defensive end, and I don't really see why they moved him kind of into that interior role this year. I know that he did it a little bit in college, and he showed some flashes in college, but my biggest guess why he was, you know, why he didn't play this past weekend was either lack of effort in practice or something like that, which would lead to why they're talking, you know, he's said refer to Frank Reich about it. So that could definitely be something with that. But, you know, I don't know. You know, we don't really know until we hear from Frank Reich. I would like to see him play because he is a younger player and he can provide that pass rush. But maybe they just wanted to go heavier or maybe it was something in practice. We don't really know.
From what you saw last year, though, Zach, I mean, what did you like about Tyquan Lewis? Do you think he was a versatile guy? He could play out there on run and pass downs?
Yeah. You know, and especially as a base defensive end, I really did like him out there, especially on run downs. I liked him a little bit on the pass downs as well. I think he showed some ability. But, you know, they probably know better than me. They're the ones who get paid the big bucks for it. But I really liked what I saw from him at defensive end, and I'd like to see him kind of utilizing that role a little bit more going forward.
All right, let's transition over here to the secondary for a second. What did you see out of Rock? Of course, you said you haven't watched the All-22 yet, so you'll probably have a different opinion once you see that. But what did you see out of defensive backs that caught your eye from a positive or negative standpoint?
Yeah, so, I mean, starting with Rocky Sim, because you kind of mentioned him there, I think it was a very rookie showing, and I think that that's fine. You know, he doesn't have to come out and be the best cornerback in the entire league from the first game. I think he showed some good traits. He showed some good ability. He was sticking with some receivers. But, you know, you also saw some rookie moments, especially on that Kane Allen touchdown where he couldn't locate the ball and Allen was able to go up and get the score. So I think there was some up and down in his play, and I think the overall secondary as a whole kind of had some up and down play. But I think going forward that the emphasis is going to be that the secondary needs to play a little bit better. Obviously, Malik Hooker had a good game and he had that really amazing pick, but the standard net definitely needs to rise for the secondary. They need to have better games going forward.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's transition over here to the offensive side of the ball and just hit on a few guys here as well before going to our big takeaways. Maybe look ahead a little bit to the Tennessee game as well. What did you like most about Jacoby Brissett? He finished 21 of 27, 190 yards, 2 touchdowns, no intercepts. Should have been a 3rd touchdown if Ebron was able to hold onto that ball more. What did you like out of him? Because I just feel like he was not only just a game manager, but he also showed the poise, and he was cool, calm, and collected under pressure. I mean, that last drive in the regular season action there with 2 minutes to go, 16-play, 80-yard drive, for a guy who was a backup quarterback 2 weeks ago, Zach, I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, and I think that those were my biggest takeaways were, you know, he went from this kind of, I wouldn't say scared, but happy feet quarterback in the pocket from when he was in, from 2017 starts to really trusting his line, really trusting his reads, trusting everything that he saw in front of him. And he played with a lot of confidence. And I really like that. He was quick, decisive, got the ball out to his playmakers. And I think he put together a really good game. I really am looking forward to the offense kind of opening up for him a little bit as they go ahead. You know, I know that Reich and Sirianni did not want to throw everything at him here in week one. But going forward, I'm excited for him to open it up a little bit for him and let him, read some more things, throw the ball downfield a little bit. But I think it was a good first showing. I think he showed that he can get the ball out of his hand and trust his playmakers, and I think that was big for him.
Do you like how they did that? I think I read that Frank Reich, that was part of the game plan there in the first half especially, just those quick passes because Bosa and Ingram. We saw it even in the first possession there. Yeah, I think Bosa got a sack on him with an easy beat of Braden Smith. Just did you like how they just did 1-2-3 throw, 1-2-3 throw? It was kind of like 2 seconds or less there. You go to your first read and hit that guy when he's open.
Yeah, no, I loved it. I've been saying it. I was saying it all last week. I've been saying it since he kind of took over as a starter for Luck. You know, in this first game, the big part is not – having him show off his arm or having him do too many complicated things out there. It's getting him in a rhythm, get his feet under him, let him be confident in what he's seeing, what he's reading, and what he's feeling. And I think that Reich and Sirianni put a game plan that really let him do that. You know, I didn't think it was anything too intricate or anything too complicated, but they let him just kind of read the field quickly, get the ball out, see the ball kind of go to the hands of the receivers and get that confidence of, hey, I'm completing passes, I can move this ball, I can feel the pocket a little bit. And I think that was the big thing from week one. So even though they didn't get the win and it wasn't like the greatest stat line ever for him, I think that getting him that confidence and getting him that poise early on is so important for the whole length of the season there.
Before we move up to Zay here for a second, I wanted to ask you just, it's kind of hard, probably hard to tell from TV, of course, and from this, but did you feel like just the confidence that the teammates had around Jacoby Brissett was eminent to you? Because it just seems like we mentioned, he was cool, calm, and collected in those pressure moments, but also just the guys were just rallying around him and really just trusting completely.
Yeah, you know, I've always said this, that it's kind of weird in the NFL because they're all professionals. Even if it's, you know, got a Cody Kessler back there, they're going to still rally around him because they're all paid professionals and they all know what they're doing. But, you know, you could definitely see they like him and they will follow around that guy. I think that they are really high on him in that locker room, not just the coaches, not just the front office, but also the players. And you could definitely see that this weekend for sure. I think that they definitely rallied around him and that was a big reason why they were able to kind of come back from the big deficit they were in.
Next up on the list here, Zach, Marlon Mack had a monster game, 25 carries, 174 yards, 7 yards per carry, and a touchdown. Take out the 63-yard touchdown, though. He still averaged almost 5 yards per carry on 24 carries, around 115 yards. It seems like we were talking about this all throughout the last month or so, Zach, but Marlon Mack is – it's kind of locked in now. He is in that bell cow role, and I think that's really what's best for this team.
Yeah, you know, I love Marlon Mack. I think that he had a very good season last year, especially late last season where he was running very confidently. He was finding holes. He was exploding up them. He was getting skinny through them too. He knew how to kind of work his angles and work in the space and get out into the openings. I think we saw that this weekend. I mean, he had a really good game after a tough first half. He kind of stuck with it. He kind of wore down the Chargers defense and he broke off a couple big runs there and really helped the team come back. So Marlon Mack's the guy. I'm not saying that he's a star running back, a Pro Bowl running back, or anything like that even right now. I think that's a little bit too early to say, but, you know, he's the guy in this offense. Everyone who was saying that the team might want to trade for Melvin Gordon or trade for whatever or get this kind of running back, they believe in Marlon Mack, and they're going to feed him. He's definitely the guy here, and I think he definitely showed that on Sunday.
Looking at his usage, 25 carries, I mean, it's stretching over a season, that's like a Michael Turner-esque kind of numbers, like 350 carries, something like that. Do you think Marlon Mack, I mean, obviously he built up bulk a little bit, we're going to see as the season progresses, do you think he is in that prime role to be a bell cow, maybe get like 300-plus touches in a season this year?
They could. They very well could. I think a lot of it's going to be determined by game flow in a lot of these games, but, you know, I think they want to. I don't know if they want to work him exactly for that amount of carries, but they want to work him. You know, they want to rely on his feet to carry them this year, and we saw that again on Sunday. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me if he got up in the 300s or so in terms of carries, because the key to success with this team is going to be on Marlon Mack's back. So I really want to see how they use him going forward, especially in games where, you know, say the defense is playing even worse than what they were on Sunday, if they're going to stick with the run or they're going to completely abandon it, we're definitely going to see going forward.
Of course, it's only 1 week, Zach, and they're going to obviously mix things up as the other seasons of the weeks go by. But when Nyheim Hines subbed in there, he had 4 catches for 4 yards. It just seems like, I'm curious to see if they involve Marlon Mack more in the offense. I know he's not a great pass catcher, but he's at least passable, I think, from what we saw at training camp. Do you think that when Mack subs out and Hines subs in, it's kind of like obvious what they're going to do on offense right now?
I don't think it's terribly obvious. I think that Hines definitely has more of a role and more of a factor in the passing game. So to a degree, you kind of expect a pass to come, but Hines is a good run blocker. He's also – or a good pass blocker, and he's also a fairly good runner. You know, I know his yards per carry weren't amazing last year, but he's also a fairly good runner. He had a couple good games last year, nearly broke 100 yards against the Raiders last season as a runner. So I don't think it's completely obvious. Obviously, you would want, you know, both your backs to kind of be – perfect at everything, but that's not really how it is. I'd like to see Hines and Mack on the field a little bit more together, actually, with Hines kind of playing a little bit more slot and more receiver role, but we'll definitely see how it goes going forward. I don't think it's terribly obvious. I don't think it really gives much away, but, you know, other teams are probably expecting more pass than run when Hines is out there.
Next on the list here for you, Zach, Devin Funchess, he broke his clavicle, so he's out at least 8 weeks. It puts him out minimum till November 10th against the Dolphins, maybe November 17th against the Jaguars. What's that loss going to do to them? Because I know he had a big play on fourth down that he dragged the defender a couple yards that got him the first down that play. Now it's Deion Kane. It's his time to really step in that role. They confirmed that today he's going to be the number two wide out outside with T.Y. Paris Campbell still in the slot there. It's kind of just all on the shoulders now of T.Y. He's going to have maybe a bigger load, but also just these young guys and Kane and Campbell. It's their time to shine, spread their wings, so to say.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty upsetting. I think Funchess was going to have a really good year for the team, and we kind of saw a lot of flashes of him playing pretty well this past weekend. So I think it's very upsetting to lose that big body guy. He's a really good player. But on the other end, it's very exciting that we get to see Kane and Campbell and these young guys really have to step up and play a bigger role. So, you know, one hand, I'm pretty upset about it because I think Funchess was a really good player. And he's definitely a better player than guys like Kane and Campbell as of right now. But I think that it's going to be fun seeing these youngsters going forward. I think that the offense is really explosive with them in there, and I think that it could be a lot more potential in the long term. So we get to see what these guys are really about until Funchess comes back, which I'm pretty excited about.
The other star of the game, so to say, was T.Y. Hilton. 8 catches, 87 yards, 2 touchdowns. I feel like we're seeing vintage T.Y. right now. He had a really good camp. He even said it was the best camp he's had. What do you expect? I know it's going to be impossible. I think they're just reimagine the connection that 12 and 13 had together. But Brissett and Hilton had a pretty good day together on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I mean, going forward, there's no reason to expect that won't be the case in the next few games or the rest of the season. I mean, they seem to have a very good rapport. They've been working with each other all camp and for the last 2 years now. So I definitely expect them to have a good rapport going forward. And you know, when you're a quarterback who hasn't really had the amount of starts or hasn't really had that much experience in the league, you want to rely on your star players. I think that's one of the easiest things you can tell a young quarterback is rely on your star players. So he's going to go out of his way to find T.Y. Hilton. And this past Sunday, it was a good plan for him. So I expect that connection to still be strong for the rest of the season.
Now the tight end, Zach, I'm curious to your thoughts on this because we saw Ebron, he had 1 catch for 8 yards. Jack Doyle had 1 for 20. And Malik Cox had 1 for 3. If you look at the snap counts, though, this is really what we saw in the first half of last year before Doyle got hurt. He had about 60% of the snaps. Ebron only played about 30% of those. And Malik Cox played about 20% of those. what did you like or what did you dislike about the tight ends on Sunday? Just I want to get your thoughts as well, just the usage of those guys, because it seemed like it's going to be a lot more balanced than people think between those three guys.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good usage there. Obviously, you want to see Ebron play a little bit more just because of what he brings in the passing game. But, you know, if you're running really well and Ebron's not really the best run blocker, I completely understand playing Doyle and Molly Cox a little bit more. I think it's a lot, again, with game flow. If you want to have more of a passing attack, play Ebron more. If you want to have more of a rushing attack, play Doyle and Molly Cox more. So I don't really have an issue with that kind of snap counts there. I definitely like Doyle as an all-around player a lot more than Ebron, so I understand him getting the more snaps. And I think the tight end group played pretty well. You know, Ebron had what should have been a touchdown in the back of the end zone. You know, it's up for debate for sure, but at the very least, you've got to say it was close enough to where you could have called it a touchdown. And then Doyle, I think, had a good game as well as a run blocker and also in the passing game. So I think the tight end group played really well, and it's going to be definitely more on their shoulders now with Bunches out for the amount of time that he's out.
Make it a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code KICKOFF, KICKOFF. At checkout to receive a discount up to $100. Again, that is KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount up to $100 over at Vivid Seats. Before we dive in now to our preview for a quick second, just your main keys, what you're looking forward to at Tennessee. I know you actually picked Tennessee when the AFC South, but before we do that, Zach, I want to get your thoughts on the offensive line, because I feel like it's a tale of two halves there. I know the line did well in the first half there, but the second half of that game, I don't know what Frank Reich's in the locker room, or maybe it was Chris Strausser, but they just went on 56 back Quentin Nelson and Anthony Costanzo, Ryan Kelly, Mark Lewinsky, Brandon Smith, really all five of those guys. They had a great second half of that game. What stood out to you most just in that change from the first second half?
Just the aggression. They seemed to be a little bit more passive and a little bit rusty in that first half. And I think in the second half, instead of kind of being that passive way, I think they were kind of like they were last year, at the beginning of last year, a little passive, a little indecisive. I do think that the second half, they came out with a punch them in the face kind of mentality. You saw it with a couple big blocks from Nelson and Costanzo and Kelly. I think they were really hitting the Chargers, and I think that's what really kept, you know, the run game going as strong as it did, because the body blows were just wearing down that team. So I think, you know, overall, I think it was a really good adjustment in halftime to kind of get more aggressive, and I think it was a really good showing in Strausser's system, which kind of preaches that physicality. So I really like what the offensive line showed in the second half.
Yeah, as they've been saying all offseason, they say run the damn ball, and they certainly did that on Sunday, 174 yards, really 205 total yards of rushing, which leads the NFL right now through week one. But let's dive into the week two preview, with the Tennessee Titans here, Zach. They bludgeoned the Cleveland Browns 43-13 in the second half of that game. It was close, but then the floodgates opened really wide open for them. What's your takeaway with Tennessee and their offense, and what do you think the Colts have to do to really make this a game where all of a sudden now with Jacksonville losing Nick Foles and with also Houston and their struggles in week one with Deshaun Watson protecting him like usual last year, this might be a big game later on the season as far as the schedule goes.
Yeah, you know, I think the Titans had a good game week one. I think they beat up on a pretty talented team, but I don't think they played as well as the score would say, and I don't mean that as a slight to Titans fans or a slight to the Titans team at all. I just don't think they really played well enough to be like a 43-13 team or whatever the score was. I think that they played well. Their offense was very conservative. They were moving the ball very like they kind of were last year, without really much aggression and much emphasis on certain things. Even though the touchdown scores were pretty nice, I think overall their offense was pretty beatable in that week one. I think they were 2 of 10 on third downs, which is not really a success for winning. But my biggest fear when it comes to the Titans is that defense. I think the defense is really solid, especially if Cam Wake plays how he did last week and Harold Landry kind of continues his development the way he's been playing. Their secondary is really good. Their linebackers are probably two or three of the more underrated guys in the league. So I think that defense is going to be a good test for Jacoby Brissett in this offense early in the year. I think it's going to be a really good game, and hopefully the Colts can come on top. I think it's going to be a tough one, though, at Tennessee. They're a really talented team, but we'll definitely see next week.
Yeah, I think my big three keys to the game here, I looked at the line today. The early one is Tennessee -3, so it's pretty much a push as far as that goes, because the home team usually gets 3 points there. What do you think with Marcus Mariota especially? I didn't really like what I saw from him week one. I went back and watched the game this morning. Derrick Henry, of course, a monster, but do you think we're going to see a lot of stack in the box, maybe 8 or 9 guys in the box, and just daring them to have Mariota beat them like they did last year?
To a degree, yeah, because I think the Titans' offensive scheme kind of allows you to stack the box. My biggest thing when it comes to stacking the box is I think it's a big misconception around the league what stacking the box is. I don't think it's really much for individual quarterbacks. Obviously, you're more likely to stack the box against a guy like Mariota than you are against like Aaron Rodgers. But for the most part, you can only stack the box according to what the offensive scheme is. You know, if they come out with two tight ends on the field, you're more likely to stack the box than you are if they come out with four or five receivers out there. You can't really stack the box if they have four receivers on the field. And that will give them the running lane up the middle. So it's definitely going to depend on what they want to do as an offense. If they want to pound it down the Colts' throat because they saw how the Chargers are running on them, then the Colts definitely have the avenue to stack the box. But if they want to kind of spread them out and let Henry kind of run on lesser boxes, they could do that as well. I think it's going to be a lot of how their offense kind of wants to go about it. But, you know, I think that there is definitely a way to beat this team. They're not unbeatable. They're not as great as what their points were last week. I think if you kind of focus on, hey, you know, IDing Henry, taking him away from the game, and making Mariota have to kind of go through his progressions and sit in that pocket a little bit longer, I think that that's definitely an avenue that they can win this game.
This is maybe an underrated aspect, maybe not a lot of people are talking about, but Cleveland, they had 18 penalties in that game, which kind of really led to the Titans really pulling away there and really getting the lead in the first place. Just how big are those just unnecessary penalties? Because even we saw for the Colts on Sunday, just the Danico Autry penalty on the field goal there that led to a touchdown. Then we saw the Justin Houston offsides penalty, which is kind of debatable, but it led to a touchdown next play from Austin Ekeler. Just how crucial are those, not only for the Titans game, Zach, but just through the rest of the season? With not an elite quarterback now on their team, no Andrew Luck, instead Jacoby Brissett, just these mental errors, they have to really just limit those to a minimum.
Yeah, no, you have to be more disciplined because you don't have that room to cover it with a guy like Andrew Luck back there. You know, Luck would always kind of cover up those kind of mistakes because he can always make the big play. Not saying that Jacoby Brissett can't, it's just that you don't have that kind of safety net of Andrew Luck. So it's definitely going to be, you know, the Colts are going to need to play more sound football going forward. They had a lot of miscues in terms of special teams and in terms of, you know, penalties this past week that you just can't have when you don't have an elite quarterback. So I think they're going to learn their lesson from that, but we'll definitely see. They can't make the mistakes they made last week, and obviously the Browns can't commit 200 penalty yards a game and expect to make the playoffs either, talking about that team.
Last few I have for you, Zach. Appreciate the time as always. Let's get to the elephant in the room for a second. Avan and Terry, we talked about him in the very beginning of the show, but are you worried if he has the same performance, or maybe if he missed a kick or two on Sunday, then it gets time to start talking about this even more?
Oh, yeah. No, if he has another really bad performance, like this is the type of performance that you just – it sticks in your mind because – I'm not saying it completely cost them the game, but it was a huge factor why they didn't win the game. I mean, you're taking points off the board by missing, you know, a chip shot, field goal, extra point. Even the 40-plus yarder wasn't, like, too egregious of a kick to ask him to make. Yeah, I mean, if he misses another extra point or two this week or misses another kick or two this week, I think you have to definitely talk about bringing in other kickers. I don't care about legacy. It doesn't matter what he's done for you. It's what's he going to do. And if he's going to keep missing kicks, you definitely have to look at replacing him.
Yeah, this is certainly a big week for him for sure. And I'm looking at that free agency class for 2020 with kickers now. I wonder if Chris Bauer maybe backs to the brink strip for like Greg Zuerlein or something like that. He might be a free agent this time next year. But before I let you go, Zach, what's your – I know it's Tuesday afternoon at 3:59 p.m. Eastern time. If you had to say right now, what's your prediction for Sunday?
I'm going to go 27-20 Colts. I think the Colts are able to control the clock and control the game. And not really let Mariota and that offense into generous field positions. I think they're able to control the game. So, yeah, 27-20 is my prediction right now.
I like it. I'm right there with you. I think it's going to be a very close game. I think a lot more close than Colts fans want to admit because I think this Titans team has improved compared to last year. But appreciate the time, Zach. And you can follow Zach on Twitter. Go ahead and do so at ZachHiggs2. Also, to his Court 45 podcast on Blue Wire Podcast Network. He also contributes over at PFN and also Stampede Blues. So, Zach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Awesome, man. Can't wait.